Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Laura Ziegler. In this next segment, we're going to be talking about the traffic of the science of traffic. Now, traffic in general has been on everybody's mind this week. Of course, what does traffic do in inclement weather? And hopefully we'll get to that, whether or not these scientific methods have any impact on how we drive in inclement weather. But first, we're going to step back and we're going to talk about just the basic science of traffic. Here to help us understand what that means is Grant Nias. He's a senior project engineer at Rhythm Engineering, which is right here in Kansas City. Welcome to Central Standard.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
What is the science of traffic?
Well, the science of traffic is, it can be a pretty broad subject, but it really is the idea of moving traffic and how you can do that more efficiently and intelligently.
And what are some of those ways that we do it more efficiently? I mean, my mind goes to timed stoplights and those new red and green lights that help me get on and off the highway. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. So really what we're talking about with the science of traffic is you can really break it down into two subjects. And the two subjects are really freeway and then intersection level. And what we do, I personally work with, is at the intersection level. And what we're really doing is trying to move traffic through sensor information. So when I say sensors, we're talking about sensors that can determine whether vehicles are present at an intersection and, how long they've been in an intersection and, how many vehicles are there. And you can then take that information and bring it to an algorithm level and move traffic more efficiently with that sensor information.
In other words, you use that information to decide how long a yellow light's going to be yellow before it turns red.
Well, it's really how long you can keep a light green. The yellow durations and the red durations that you see at an intersection signal are really determined based on safety values and can't change. But what we're really trying to do is determine what's the most effective way to keep a green light on and how long it should stay green.
Do those, and I assume the answer to this is yes, but I don't really know, algorithms change depending on the time of day?
Exactly. So
right.
There's a way, in the traffic industry, it's been done a certain way for 20 and 30 years that really hasn't changed. And it's based on that time of day schedule where you've got a set timing plan in the morning and a set timing plan in the afternoon and really can't change beyond that. And what we're trying to do today is bring more intelligence into that and be able to adapt to traffic as it sees it rather than just on a time of day based algorithm.
Mm-hmm. Are people around the country doing this like you guys are here?
There are some, but we're really at the leading edge of it. And we're trying to bring innovation into an industry that really hasn't had much in the past, 20 years.
Yeah, we don't really think of innovation in traffic. I mean, we think of it typically in science like medicine or engineering or something like that. But this is really about getting people from point A to point B more safely?
Well,
quicker
and safer. If you're able to move traffic, at speed and, aren't creating this accordion effect or where,
the accordion effect?
So it's where you've got cars that are slowing down and then speeding back up or even coming to a stop. So where you're stopping vehicles. Anytime you can reduce that, you're going to improve the safety along a stretch of roadway.
You don't look like a traffic nerd. How'd you get interested in this?
that's a good question. When I had always wanted to be an engineer and wasn't ever really sure what subject of engineering I ever wanted to get into, and so I went into civil engineering, which is a broad subject,
and infrastructure, bridges,
infrastructure,
roads,
exactly. And as I went through my schooling, I really gravitated towards the transportation and to a more specific sense, traffic engineering.
Hmm. Is that a big field, a growing field?
It's not in the grand scheme of things, it's not a huge field. It's a small subset of the transportation engineering field.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's a relatively small industry.
And I would guess that with the problem of sprawl, the questions are really growing around what that you know, what kind of things the science of traffic can do. And speaking of sprawl, this is something I read while I was looking into this topic. Kansas City is now the home to the most freeway lane miles per capita among metro areas with more than 1 million residents, boasting about 1.2 miles of road for every 1,000 residents. So, and we are, I think, number 10, according to one website, the sprawliest, the 10th most sprawliest city in the nation. I know that's not grammatical, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. And
we have like a lot of sprawl compared with other cities.
Yeah, and that's accurate. And that's one way that the traffic is better, you know, here in Kansas City than it is at other places in the country. And the reason for that is, you know, we have, you know, space to sprawl out, if you will. We have this right away where we can build these highways and you know, keep traffic moving efficiently. If you go to the coasts and specifically the East Coast, they don't have that land where they can expand and widen their roadways. So they really have to work with the existing infrastructure and improve traffic that way.
Plus, they have much better public transportation.
Yeah, exactly.
So there are less people actually in their cars for less time.
Well, yeah, and
they're, the same time.
They're forced to improve their public transportation just because of the fact they don't have as much roadway as they do in other places of the country.
Can you give me some specifics here? How much exactly can you improve traffic? Give people that are listening kind of an idea about what this means in their life.
Well, you know, we've had some studies done, and we've been shown to improve travel time by up to 40%. So when you're talking about that, 40% every trip you go through a stretch of let's say 10 intersections, and you're improving your travel time, so the time it takes to get through the whole stretch, by up to, you know, a few minutes. And if you add that up, you know, every day, so say you go on it, you know, twice a day, and you do that every day for the whole year, you're talking about a substantial amount of time you're saving over the course of a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't even, you know, include the safety or the reduction in emissions that you're saving.
You're listening to KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Laura Ziegler, and our great guest today is Grant Nias. He's with Rhythm Engineering here in Kansas City, and they are a group that deals with the science of traffic. If you have questions about how we get to where we're going safely and more efficiently, join our conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Email us, our address, centralstandard@kcur, or you can also tweet us, KCURCST. Does all this science really, has it been documented to improve safety?
Yeah. I mean,
in what ways?
So, you know, what we were talking about a little bit before is the fact that we're keeping these vehicles moving at a consistent speed, mm-hmm. and reducing, you know, rear-end crashes specifically. And we've shown to reduce crashes by up to 30%, which...
Just by this timing business.
Yeah, just by this. It's an adaptive timing change that's occurring based on the conditions it sees, based on intersections, you know, adjacent to it. So it's intelligent to know what happened at the previous intersection to improve the travel time, improve the safety. So you're improving the safety, and you're also, you know, improving the cost of just a cost to the city of having emergency vehicles go out to the corridor is substantial to taxpayers.
Do these techniques even care if we have weather like we've been having this week? Does it respond to inclement weather?
So it's able to determine how many vehicles are coming through your intersection.
But not whether the roads are icy or if there are like snow banks on either side of the road.
It won't,
if the roads are narrower.
Right. It won't directly know that the weather's changed. But what it does pick up is how the traffic is driving, how the traffic is changing. So it can, you know, determine that there's less traffic coming through, and that it may not be driving at the speed that it used to be. So there, you know, the traffic coming through is slower than it used to be.
All right, let's go to Jeff. He's calling from Kansas City, Kansas. He has a question, and he says he drives a lot. Go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, well, I drive in town a lot in Kansas City, Kansas especially. And it's like all these lights on these little streets are all timed. They're just on a timer. So I pull up and then stop, and I just sit there and watch an empty intersection, just doing nothing. I'm just sitting there idling, and I've counted it. Sometimes they're 20-second-long lights, and I'm just sitting there, and I'm like, why can't you have it, you know, like where the light will be green one way all the time unless somebody pulls up on the side street, then it would trigger it so that it would then change. But it should be where it just parks green going the main drag, like, let's say, Minnesota Avenue. You know, why is
you mean
it,
when there's not that much traffic, you're...
Yeah, well, I mean, if there's nobody coming on a side street...
You're just stopped for a long time.
And you got traffic, and then it never fails. I'll sit through the whole light, and as soon as my light turns green, somebody pulls up to the other side, and so then they got to sit there. And it's like, seems like that's a huge environmental problem with, you know, when you're talking about idling cars, because now the new concept with cars is when you come up to a stop sign, the car shuts off.
Yeah. Let's let Grant answer. Thanks, Jeff. That's a good point. What about the impact on the environment?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. But to step back from the environment, your question about why is it, you know, like that, and there's a substantial amount of signals across the country, and honestly, probably the majority of them that aren't timed efficiently. And what happens, you know, when they aren't timed efficiently is you increase your emissions and increase you know your travel time and time it takes you to get to a certain destination. And what we're trying to do is give a solution to the agency to use that can, you know, reduce those emissions, reduce the time it takes you to get through those intersections.
All right, let's go to Deidre. Deidre is in Kansas City, Missouri. Sensors under the road, do they exist? In other words, I have this question too. Just exactly how do these things work?
Yeah, there are a variety of different types of sensors out there, and that's the most common type is a sensor that sits in the pavement underneath your vehicle and detects when a vehicle comes through.
Deidre, did you want to talk to Grant?
I'm just very glad that you have ended this debate between me and a friend of mine, because he doesn't believe they exist, and I do. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling. All right, let's go to Rack, who's calling from Waldo. What about pedestrians? Good question. Rack?
I was wondering about not just the efficiency of running cars through, but it's also about stopping traffic from time to time so the people down the road a few blocks have a break in the traffic where they can cross the street, and also just the safety of the pedestrians crossing at the traffic signal.
Yeah, so that's a very important facet of the, you know, the traffic engineering world, and the general thinking there is that you know, pedestrian safety overrides any sort of improvements that need to be done along the signal timing of the vehicular traffic. So that usually is taken into account when the timing plans are set up and configured.
Yeah.
Interesting. What about road rage? Do you think all this may have any impact on that person that pulls in front of you and how you might feel about that, or the person that gets mad at you because you do something they don't anticipate?
Well, certainly, yeah. I think anytime keeping traffic moving smoothly, you're going to reduce road rage because you aren't stopping and starting. You aren't creating these instances where road rage can occur. So,
is that something that you guys have discussed or factors into your calculations at all, or is it any part of the conversation?
It's not a huge part. We're really, you know, we're trying to improve the safety and reduce the, you know, time it takes you to get to a destination. But I think if you do both of those, you will reduce the road rage.
And do you work with who are the other people that you work with in the community? I mean, obviously the engineers, public works. Do you work with law enforcement?
Not usually law enforcement. It's usually the engineering departments of either a local agency, so a city or county, or a state agency, whether it's a DOT of a certain state or not.
Dale is calling from Kansas City, Missouri. Dale, you have a question for Grant?
Yeah, I can actually.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, this is Dale from Kansas City, Missouri. I was just trying to find out on the lights why can't they possibly start blinking green maybe 20, 30 seconds before they go yellow? That way, as a chauffeur or a driver of a big truck or anything else, they know that the light's going to change at that point, and it's the flow of traffic would be a lot better. People would not hit their brakes constantly before the light is changing, you know, because they just don't know. And also, we might be able to get rid of the red light cameras that way and have less accidents.
Are you a chauffeur, Dale?
I am, yes.
Yeah, like a limousine service?
Correct.
Uh-huh. What do you think, Grant?
Yeah, that's interesting. There's actually some types of those signals that you're talking about in Europe that are used currently. It's not something that's gained a whole lot of traction here in the United States, but it is something that is interesting to think about. What the downside to going to something like that is you're actually then turning your signals into a fixed timing plan. So you have to make these decisions on how you're going to serve traffic. If you start the flashing 30 seconds prior to when it goes green, you're having to make decisions earlier than you otherwise would want to. So in essence, you're improving some safety, but you're reducing some of the efficiency of the intersection at the same time.
Well, and I understand that, but it's on 71 Highway or that little Bruce R. Watkins Drive area, it's just horrendous at this point in time, and never to get the upgrade for timed lights and or synchronized. And so with that feature, at least people would know they're about to change and they could do their speed accordingly, you know.
Thanks, Dale. Grant, any response to that?
Yeah, it's you know, it's certainly an interesting subject, and I'm sure you know, as time goes on, there's going to be some of that innovation that does occur in the industry that may be tested out here on in the United States.
All right, thanks for your call, Tom in Kansas City, Missouri. I think you're going to be the last call. What do you want to say? What do you want to ask? You're on the air.
Yeah, it seems like the technology of stoplights just seems like it's way behind the times. And I'm wondering how soon it'll be before we can have stoplights that can actually detect a car coming or know that there's no cars coming and can make a decision based on that, based on what it sees visually.
You mean as opposed to set times? Is that what you mean, as opposed to set times?
Yeah, as opposed to just having it timed or some simple sensor under the road. I mean, I know that technology is advanced enough that we can do that, but it's just it hasn't taken place, and I think it would make a huge difference.
Yeah, that's you know, that technology is here today, and that's actually what our company at Rhythm Engineering does, is we use artificial intelligence to serve the traffic. It's not as widely deployed as some of the traditional techniques that are used, primarily due to, you know, funding and other reasons, and that's how it's always been done. The technology itself is here today, and it'll only become more prevalent as the future goes on.
Thanks, Tom. How are you guys funded, by the way? Do you work with grants or federal funding? Do you get some federal funding?
Yeah, so the funding will go directly to the cities and the DOTs, and they in return will purchase it from our company.
Mm-hmm. And are you working in other cities right now?
Yeah, we're primarily we are across the whole country. Our biggest area is on the East Coast, in the Northeast area, but we do have some in the Midwest and some on the West Coast.
Awesome. Well, that's great. That's good for Kansas City. And thanks very much to Grant Nias. He's the Senior Project Director at Rhythm Engineering, which is right here in Kansas City. Sounds like this is a positive application of Big Brother in our lives, which is kind of welcome news because we're only hearing negative things. Good luck and help us drive more safely and efficiently. Thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. And now let's shift gears to the big story of the day, which is Kansas City snow. We're going to talk, as you know, at... Why don't you talk to me? Why don't you talk to me? As many of you know, many parts of the Kansas City metro received 10 or more inches of snow on Tuesday, paralyzing much of the city. School was called off. Many businesses were closed, leaving many of you at home for a day or two. Part of our ongoing community engagement project is called Tell KCUR. And we took to the airwaves and social media this week to ask this question. What was the coolest thing you've ever done on a snow day with your family or with your friends? Here to talk about that question and about your answers is Allison Rollitt. She's KCUR's social media producer. Thanks for coming, Allison.
Hi, Laura. It's great to be here again.
So we got a lot of responses and stories about people who pass their time on the snow day. Probably a lot of people on their commuters, on their computers and on their Twitter feeds, maybe stuck at home.
Laura, especially as people were experiencing an active snowstorm in Kansas City, we really wanted to reach out to people and ask for their coolest, their most interesting snow day stories. But we really got back a lot of typical responses. Some people use snow days as a chance to catch up on favorite TV shows, to snuggle on the couches during movies, and lots of just kind of things that you would expect people to do on snow days, you know. And we thought, you know, maybe if you are a really busy person and a snow day forces you to kind of stop, take a breath, and you finally get that chance on the couch, hey, you know, we thought that was awesome.
Go
and
for
we
it.
Think that's pretty cool, too.
Just to do some of the ordinary things that you and I want to do when we don't have time to do it. Now you got a little bit more time. That's an interesting way to look at what were some of the other responses.
Okay, well, you know, we had some people that dug a little deeper. We had one guy on Facebook reminisced about a first kiss on a snow day he had with his middle school girlfriend. And we had several people tweet us about them rallying their neighbors together for fun indoor game days. But some of the most really interesting stories we received were about snow nights instead of snow days. Like Tracy, she tweeted us about an impromptu block party that involved lots of neighbors, snowmen, and hot chocolate. And I've never even been to a block party during the day, and I can only imagine how fun one during the night would be, especially when it's snowing.
Kind of like what our Helen Stringer was talking about, an impromptu community.
There you go, with snow. And Terry in Parkville, she said the coolest thing she did was, quote, night sledding, built a bonfire and brought in the new year playing in the snow under the stars and fireworks. Now, can you imagine doing that as a kid? That would have just been a ball.
So much fun. We only have about 1 minute left, Allison, but were there any responses that really stood out?
Yes. We hands down, the coolest snow story we had came from Sally, who told us on Facebook about her daily commute from the Plaza to Johnson County. Well, on one snow day, she got stuck in the snow with her fellow bus passengers, and it was going to take 2 hours for anyone to come help them. And she told us on Facebook, instead of everyone becoming angry, a party atmosphere took over. People started to share what comforts they had, including a thermos or two of coffee, cookies, sandwiches, and music. The driver turned up the heat, and they all spent the morning telling stories and playing cards.
That's
and, you know, Sally
awesome.
Tells us that many of them are still friends.
That's awesome. Now, we want to end this segment with a clip of tape that two of our reporters here, Laura Spencer and Frank Morris, well, they didn't actually do it, but they came together, and their son, Will, said this about his snow day.
Well, I just like the fact that when they tell you there's a snow day. I also like waking up and seeing that there's snow outside. I jumped up and down, and I got really excited. It was very fun going sledding with my friend. We walked over to the hill. My sled got totally filled with snow. No, I don't want there to be school tomorrow.
Unfortunately, I'm not sure, but I think Will Spencer Morse may be at school and maybe not. We got to wrap it up here. I want to thank our guests, Helen Stringer, first from Oasis, and Grant Nias of Rhythm Engineering's very interesting conversations. You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows from Central Standard Paid of KCUR. Up to date is next. Stay tuned. Central Standard's produced by Matthew Long Middleton. I'm Laura Ziegler, and this is KCUR.